And we're back. Greg, I just can't get enough of that hero cat. Can you believe how she chased that dog away?
Watching that video is the pause that refreshes.
Too funny. Let's go to TTB's nonstop news meteorologist, Kion Wolf, with the five-day forecast. Kion, it looks like you're keeping cool.
That's right, Lee. Greg gave me permission to wear short sleeves because of all the heat. All right, let's take a look at the board. This band of intense showers is going to inch across the state for the next 3 hours, but it won't bring relief from the heat. In fact, I want to talk about climate change for a moment. It's getting scary. Satellite tracking shows Antarctica losing 159 billion tons of ice every year, which is up from...
Speaking of Antarctica, did you see that YouTube video of the penguin on roller skates?
Going through the mall? Attention shoppers!
good one, Lee.
No penguins on roller skates. Do not put that up. This is serious. But it's also a chance for the very best qualities in human beings to be pulled forward. If we set aside our differences and act for the good of this planet, our planet, we can make a difference.
Well, that's very profound, Kion.
You know, I wouldn't mind watching that Hero Cat video again.
We could play it backwards. Have we ever played it backwards?
Not since Tuesday.
Well, maybe they do have a point. Not everybody wants to hear about climate change, but what do local meteorologists think about it? That's the theme of our show today. And now, speaking of ice, our wacky traffic guy is going to sing his report to the tune of Let It Go from Frozen. Here he is, Colin McEnroe.
No, I'm actually not prepared for that. Let's see. Let it go. Taillights on 84. I don't know. I don't know how to do this. I'd like to say that our guests here do not work at any TV stations that have that kind of happy talk format. That's simply a product of my imagination. We do want to talk about these guys because local meteorologists are really the science communicators that you probably see the most in your life. If you think about it, unless you're actually enrolled in a science program somewhere, the people who talk to you the most, not just about weather science, but any kind of science, probably on a daily basis, you're seeing the face and hearing the voice of one of the people that we're talking to here today or one of their colleagues at the stations around Connecticut. So with us in studio is Ryan Hanrahan, meteorologist at NBC. His blog is Way Too Much Weather, which can be found at ryanhanrahan.com. Bruce DePriest is a meteorologist with 36 years of experience, is the chief meteorologist at WFSB. Garrett Argyanis is the meteorologist at NBC Connecticut. His website is weatherx, how do I say that?
Weathercs.com.
Weathercs. I was trying to pronounce it as a word, and there was my mistake.
It's not a word.
All right, it's not a word. In a little while also, we're going to talk to Andrew Revkin. He's been covering global warming since the 1980s and teaches at Pace University and writes the Dot Earth blog for the New York Times. So I want to begin... before we get deep in the weeds here, but just sort of talking about who you guys are and what it is that you do. So, Ryan, there's a difference. I mean, we're going to be talking about climate science, but you're not a climate scientist. You guys aren't climate scientists. That's not what you signed up for. You're a meteorologist. So what does that mean? What's the difference?
So basically what we do on a daily basis is we come up with a forecast for the next 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days. We talk about short-term weather events, tornadoes, hurricanes, thunderstorms. And we don't on a daily basis deal with long-term trends that would be the difference between weather and climate. Climate is what you'd see over the course of decades or hundreds of years. You know, we don't issue a 100-year forecast on the 6 o'clock news. We do a 7-day forecast. And so there's a fundamental difference between weather and climate, and I'm not sure the general public really understands that. And I think that's one of the things we try to communicate to people.
If we do nothing else today, we will try to unthread those differences. And so, Bruce, what makes a person get into meteorology? To do what you do, and you've met lots of your colleagues over the years, is there a common thread, a certain kind of curiosity, a certain set of interests that brings you into a field like this?
I would say yes. First of all, I think there has to be a passion. Everybody's interested in the weather. Everybody wants to know how the weather is going to affect their life. But I think what grabbed a lot of us at a young age was that passion in weather. And I go back a longer ways than what Garrett and Ryan do. I was born, you know, in the 1950s, and I had a chance to grow up and in the 1960s, which was a very profound decade. And that's a decade when we landed men on the moon, saw a lot of advances. Vietnam was going on, a lot of crazy things going on in the world. And here I was, a kid interested in astronomy, interested in weather, seeing, you know, men being landed on the moon. I'm thinking, why can't we do anything about the weather? So, you know, my father bought me a telescope. I became interested in astronomy and just in general was turned on to science at that age and basically stuck with it because I have a passion in the weather, not just a casual interest. It's a passion that just kept me going through the rigorous calculus and physics that we have to go through with college, and that turns some people away. It's a very difficult program. A lot of people don't realize that. Some people think that, you know, we just get up there and we present somebody else's forecast. They do the graphics for us. But no, we're the scientists behind the forecast and the makers of that forecast. So I was really turned on at a young age, became passionate about it, and I think that's a common thread that we all have.
So, Garrett, you know, Bruce is talking about the training. So in the training, in the education that you go through, is climate science, as we would understand that, part of that training, or are you getting trained differently? And is that word not being said quite so much?
Well, I would argue that at this point in time, climate science is a more broader discussion in the undergraduate level than it was even back when I went to school. It was about 15 years ago. And climate science and climate change were just kind of coming onto the radars of a lot of people. And so, you know, in my education as an undergraduate from 1997 to 2001, we had some discussion about climate, but there was not a big focus on climate change and its impacts.
And so, I mean, that raises the question, Ryan. I mean, as I say, you guys are probably the most omnipresent science communicators in most people's lives, you know, unless they have subscriptions to a lot of magazines like Scientific American or something like that. On a casual basis, you guys talk to them about a kind of science, which, as Bruce says, you guys get a lot of training and you are the scientists behind a forecast. But I guess I'm sort of wondering also, I mean, obviously on a nightly basis, most meteorologists don't talk about climate science. They talk about meteorology. And I'm also – I'm wondering how different are those two fields? Is it like a cardiologist talking about dermatology? Because I have no interest in my cardiologist's opinions about dermatology. Or are you guys a little closer together than that?
I'd say a little closer together, but – I mean, the two fields are very different. Someone who studies climate science probably doesn't know much, if anything, about tornadoes or hurricanes, and vice versa. A hurricane scientist probably knows very little about climate change unless they're looking at the links between the two. So there is some crossover, and I think, you know, meteorologists in general have a, you know, fundamental understanding of how the atmosphere works, why you get certain weather patterns. And where it all comes from. It comes from the solar energy coming down to the earth, and you're able to get weather. But the two are very different. And, you know, just like, you know, Garrett said, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of climate science education in college. There was very little of that. And what I've learned through the years has really been what I've sort of sought out myself, mm-hmm. reading journal articles, trying to keep on top of the latest information. But it's not easy to do. You have to, you know, figure out where the information is coming from. Is it good? Is it coming from reputable sources? And so you sort of have to fish through all of that and educate yourself.
Is there also a difference in temperament? I mean, if you gravitate towards meteorology, Bruce described certain qualities that he sees in himself and maybe sees in other meteorologists. Are you interested in a certain group of things, a certain group of questions that are fundamentally different, not even on the basis of the different spheres of knowledge, but the kind of curiosity? I'm like, are meteorologists sort of really, really interested in these immediate weather patterns in a way that kind of dovetails with your overall personality and temperament?
That's a good question. I mean, my first weather-related memory was being a little kid on Cape Cod and missing the Hamden tornado. I was living in Brantford at the time on vacation on the Cape, and my dad was still working at Hamden, and I was devastated that I wasn't there for the tornado. Crying, upset. I couldn't believe it. That was the first thing I remember weather-wise was the 1989 tornado.
Okay, so that would be a way in which you guys are different from most people. Most of us want to be someplace else when the tornado
comes. A little strange. But, I mean, we all do have a passion for the science. We love it. If there's a snowstorm coming, you know, we may work a 12, 15, 16-hour day. But chances are if we weren't at work tracking the snowstorm, we'd be watching it from home. We may be probably dressed a little bit differently, wearing sweatpants as opposed to a suit. But, I mean, there are very few people in this field who don't absolutely love meteorology. And that's one of the things that is really cool about the weather and our careers is that we're able to do what our hobby is. We're able to do what we love on a daily basis.
You know, Bruce, I guess another thing I'm wondering about as we sort of get towards this whole question of climate science and climate change is whether also let me see if I can express this in my fumbling way. But, you know, when you think about what climate science is and what theories of climate change are, they really are the result of a lot of complex interlocking thinking. In other words, it's not one data set. It's not two data sets. It's hundreds and hundreds of data sets based on lots of different studies so that ultimately a theory and an overarching model begins to emerge, at least within the world of climate science. And I'm wondering if that's sort of a difference too, that you guys, you're not trying to build a really complicated theory. In fact, you're looking for the most simple and direct way of understanding what's about to happen that you can find.
We are. You know, we're looking at the basic fundamentals of, you know, heating, heat distribution, how that affects the day. Like, for example, today we have a front off to our west, and that's the focus of thunderstorms that are going to be popping up this afternoon. So we're looking at a lot of different things, you know, the humidity, the wind, what's happening in the upper regions of the atmosphere, the lower regions of the atmosphere. But we also look at information, and we look at these computer guidance models. And I think there are some similarities in what we look at and what the climatologists look at. We're looking at how one variable in weather changes with time. And they're basically doing the same thing over a longer period of time. And one thing that's the kind of the nature of the beast with weather and climate is that your computer guidance models and your climate models are only as good as the data you put into them. The challenge that we have in meteorology is that we can't measure every cubic foot of the atmosphere. So we have to measure here and there and make guesses in between. And then that gets gridded in the computer guidance models and we make guesses. If that guess is wrong, well, that error gets magnified with time. So that's why we don't go beyond 7 days in weather forecasting. And with climate, you know, I got to imagine to some degree they're dealing with the same thing. The data may not be perfect that goes into their climate models. And therefore, the question I raise is, well, what could the error possibly be if you're trying to forecast 50 to 100 years into the future? So if my basic statement is, if I can't tell you to the degree what Sunday's temperature is going to be, how can somebody tell me to the degree what the temperature is going to be on the planet Earth, which has variable temperatures, as you know, equator to pole and so on, 50 to 100 years from now.
All right. You know, we're going to add to this conversation now. I mean, I haven't even asked these guys, although I think Bruce just gave you kind of a little hint of where he's going to go on this. But I haven't even asked these guys to sort of lay out their positions on climate change to whatever degree they have rock solid positions on this. We're going to do that. We're going to talk about it some more. We're going to take your phone calls, 860-275-7266, 860-275-7266. But joining us now is Andrew Revkin. As I said, he's been covering global warming, climate change since the 1980s. At Pace University, writes the .earth blog for the New York Times, and he's also the author of several books, including Global Warming, Understanding the Forecast. Andrew Revkin, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you. I enjoyed listening in on the last couple of minutes there.
Well, some of this show derives from a conversation that I think I heard you having with Ira Flatow. Working here in public radio, of course, you don't get to listen to a lot of public radio because you're busy trying to get another public radio show on. But the time that I will often hear another show is if I'm in the bathroom because it's on, the speakers are on in the bathroom. And so I heard somebody talking to Ira Flatow about this. And he said this thing, and I'm pretty sure it was you, that really kind of this light bulb went on in my head. And it's sort of the thing that we started out the show with, which is that, yes, the most prominent science communicators in a lot of people's lives, the people, the figures that the average person, you know, interacts with on a one-way basis, on a daily basis, getting information about climate, weather, and just science in general. It probably is TV meteorologists, and specifically the TV meteorologists who are on their local television stations. So, and one thing that you and Ira were talking about is, I mean, there have been some overarching studies of this, right, about what meteorologists, particularly the ones who are on television, think about climate change and how it might differ from what climate scientists think about it. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, for sure. There have been surveys, and there is more. I think there is more of a range of skepticism in the meteorological community. Now, keep in mind that these are all funky delineations anyway. A lot of the leading quote-unquote climate scientists have their degrees in what's called meteorology. So climatology, the study of climate change, is a fairly new thing because basic climate science was sort of the underpinning for forecasting and meteorology, but climate change science is just really the, I mean, really in a big way, is the last 30 years. So it's a really new field still.
So when President Obama was introducing the latest national climate assessment, to assist him and as sort of part of the backdrop of that conversation, he brought eight TV weathercasters, both from the local and national level. Al Roker was there. And you know, based on your looking at that, Andrew Rufkin, I'm wondering, first of all, it seems like a pretty canny move on President Obama's part, realizing, yeah, that's who most constituents, that's who most citizens look to for this kind of information.
Yeah, I think it's very important. I think it's hard to on a daily weather forecast, just like it's hard in a daily newspaper to get in discussions of something on a very long time scale, like global climate change from greenhouse gas buildup in the atmosphere. You know, we're talking about multi-generational time scales, and not only that, even if you wanted to do something about it, we have what's called commitment in the climate system. It's kind of like a big flywheel. Once it gets going, it's hard to turn around. So even if President Obama and the Secretary General of the UN somehow magically waved a wand and got the world to stop emitting greenhouse gases, we're committed to certain trajectories here regardless anyway. So these timescales are really hard to fit into, as I just said, both daily news coverage and and in the life of a weather forecaster, which is really about, well, how severe is the thunderstorm threat today here in the Hudson Valley or where you are.
So does it make sense to you, Andrew Rufkin, for these three guys to be talking about climate change? Or, I mean, in a way, they're sort of saying, it's not really what we do.
I think it does make sense when you have the opportunity for weather forecasters to talk about this, just as doctors are a good messenger on obesity. You know, they're a trusted messenger, even though weather forecasting is hard and it's still beating, you know, often weather forecasters are despised by the public when things go wrong, but
we
rely on them overall.
Yeah, that's never happened to our three guests, actually.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I'm aware of that.
By the way, one thing that was important, the last discussion about climate models versus forecast models, there is a big difference in the two things. One is that using a computer model to forecast the weather for the next 2 weeks is highly dependent on what's called initial conditions, you know, getting the temperatures and sea temperatures and stuff right at the beginning of your model run so you know that going forward you're actually representing conditions in the real world. In climate models, initial conditions really don't matter. It's more about how you're splitting the atmosphere into this giant thing of dice, of kind of cubes, and it's how they talk to each other. It's how the functioning of this mathematical model meshes with what we know about the real world. So it's kind of a different use of a similar mathematical construct. But it's different in the sense that the model's reliability going forward as a climate forecasting device is not really a function of initial conditions.
All right, Andrew Rufkin, hang on here, and everybody hang on. I'm going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk some more about this. 860-275-7266. You may tweet us at WNPRColin.
I'm not sure that I will be very well suited to the new post-climate change society. It bothers me. I'm not sure that I have the tools to deal with the complete collapse of the modern world.
All right, we're back. By the way, if you want to call in, some people already have, but 860-275-7266. With us by phone is Andrew Rufkin, covering global warming since the 1980s, writes the Dot Earth blog for the New York Times. In studio, Ryan Hanrahan, meteorologist for NBC Connecticut, and Garrett Argianis, also a meteorologist at NBC Connecticut. I should say, full disclosure, I mean, Garrett Argianis is one of my favorite meteorologists ever, because he and I used to kind of work together on a show on WTIC, and he was very fast. Very succinct. I like that in a meteorologist.
The rule was, do not upset Colin.
I know. I love the way that – well, never mind. Brewster Peace is here with us. He's the chief meteorologist at WFSB. And, you know, speaking of hard science, let me just say this. One of the things that I think is a very blurry thing for people out there watching television is the height of meteorologists. If I were to tell you to write down on a piece of paper in order of how tall you think they are, these three guys, you'd get it wrong, all right? I guarantee you'd get it wrong. All right, because yeah, now I see them in person and it's different. Our number, 860-275-7266. So, Ryan, I'm going to ask you a little bit more just based on some of the stuff that Andrew Revkin is just saying. I mean – first of all, I'm guessing your station manager isn't leaning on you. Your program director isn't saying, you know, talk more about climate change, Ryan, because in some ways the kind of communication that you're doing with an audience doesn't really necessarily invite that kind of speculation, if that's what we would call it.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true in some respects. I mean, when you have 3 minutes to do a weathercast, you know, what are you focused on? Well, you're focused on the holiday weekend and will it be sunny for someone's barbecue? I mean, that's really the goal at 5:30 and 6 o'clock at night. But at the same time, there's certainly a lot of opportunities to explore climate change and climate science in other parts of the newscast. I mean, we've certainly done a lot of stories post-Sandy about coastal resiliency, sea level rise. And so that a lot of that is incumbent upon the meteorologist to pitch those stories and to go out and want to cover them. And it's something that I think a lot of stations and a lot of newspapers are open to, but you got to take the initiative to go out and do it.
Well, you know, and Bruce, is there another part of this, which is that I'm sure if you go to a barbecue these days, people are going to ask you about climate change. And if you really start talking about what you think about climate change, you may wind up in an argument at the barbecue, or half the people may be on one side of the picnic table and half the people on the other side. And that's when you get to your job, not really probably what your bosses want is for you to say something, because this is still in America something of a divisive issue, for you to say something, whatever that something is, that could alienate 30, 40, 50% of your audience.
That's true. You know, when you go to your local barbecue, you do get into a discussion that often takes the entire barbecue to go through. But I try not to get anybody mad. I'll present some of the things that I've learned. Like Ryan said before, you know, a lot of the things that we learned about climate we're researching on our own. And as far as TV goes, well, you know, we did a special last May on climate change, which did aggravate some local scientists and some people. You know, talked about how, you know, the theory is that the storms that we've had recently, you go back to Sandy, Irene, and, of course, the October snowstorm that we had that brought a record power outage. People are thinking, well, wow, what's going wrong with our climate? You know, are these storms necessarily the result of climate change? And I'm thinking to myself, well, let me go back and find out what happened in the past. And that's kind of what I showed in that particular weather special, that while there is the perception that storms are getting worse, we've had plenty of bad storms in past years, whether we're in a cooling phase or a warming phase at the present time. So I just kind of try to put things in the right perspective using 36 years of experience and, you know, going back and observing weather for the last 36 years, and I just try to present it in a way that is not going to get people ticked off, but just kind of present, well, you know what, it's been bad in the past as well. It's not necessarily all happening right now.
You know, second. Yeah, go ahead. Did you want to say something, Andrew Revkin?
Yeah, and I've been writing about this reality for years. One of the other issues is we end up, especially in the media and in the public mind too, when something is anomalous or rare and it happens in our time but didn't happen before in our lives, we think, "Whoa, my God, what's new?" But when you look with a long time scale, it's not the case at all. In fact, back in the early 2002, I wrote a long piece about an important study that looked at the sediment laid down in lake beds around New England and upstate New York, where, you know, it's sort of like a book. You look deeper in the lake, the layers chart conditions going back millenniums, not just centuries. And it turns out that the Northeast has been hit by periods of that area, the areas that were studied were hit by these extraordinary flooding rain events, such the kind of things that scour the land and put a layer of gravel into the lake bed. They found that these patterns were actually more common a couple thousand years ago than they are now. So it's, you know, it's really important to look at that data as well. And it's really hard the science, what's called attribution, like attributing some current pattern or extreme event to this new forcing on the climate system, greenhouse gases, is really hard, and it's full of real uncertainty.
Well, yeah, I want to come back to that, Andrew Revkin, but just, Garrett, I want to go over to you for a second. So, I think just to sort of piggyback on what Bruce is saying, that, I mean, if we had a climate science, if we had a climatologist here, maybe Andrew will say something to this effect as we go along here, but if we had one in the room, he'd probably be saying, well, yeah, you can't look at one storm and say, well, that's due to climate change, but you can look at extreme weather. You can, you know, I mean, if you look at the National Climate Assessment, I mean, there's like a whole section called extreme weather. But once again, it gets back to what meteorologists do, right? You guys are kind of going storm by storm, as opposed to the kinds of interlocking cubes, to use Andrew Revkin's term, that add up to climate science.
Absolutely, yes. You know, we're in that very short-term mindset, so we're looking ahead to the next few days. So if there's a storm like Sandy or like the October 2011 snowstorm, that's going to be the focus. But we're not generally linking storm to storm or discussing even frequency of storms. And I think it's more the frequency and intensity of storms that kind of builds into that discussion of climate change.
I mean, Andrew Revkin, if somebody who worked on the National Climate Assessment were here right now talking to us, I'm assuming one thing that they would say is that Bruce is absolutely right. You can't look at a storm in one storm in 2014 and say it represents some proof of climate change or extreme weather. But you also can't look at a storm that happened 100 years ago of comparable intensity and say, well, that therefore disproves that there's any really excessive change in weather patterns. I mean, climate scientists do believe that extreme weather as a whole is part of climate change, right?
Well, no. It depends on what you're talking about. Heat, the ones that have been most statistically robustly linked to greenhouse force climate change, which is what we're talking about, are heat events, really hot spells, and heavy downpours. There you do have statistical significance. You know, statistics, you can lie with numbers, but ultimately when you look at the numbers carefully and you have peer review and open data, you can see things that really do jump out at you. And for heat and for heavy downpours, yes, those links are there. But for most of the other things that society worries about, hurricanes, certainly in the Midwest, tornadoes is actually a counterindication. It seems that the tornado, there's no way to see a relationship between tornado activity and global warming. In fact, in the last few years, when we've had hot, dry summers in the Midwest, it's been a tornado drought. So you have to look at that stuff too. And you know, anyone who's and I try to be as careful and dispassionate as I can about this. And you know, again, not all weird things are because of this new phenomenon. Rising sea levels mean that any coastal storm or hurricane that does hit it will have more of an impact because seas are high, you know, higher than they would otherwise have been without warming climate. So that's another one of the clear-cut realities, but it's not as simple as saying anything extraordinary is because of global warming. And sometimes, frankly, I've criticized some of the reports of this sort. This one is pretty well done. The IPCC report was very well done this past couple of years in terms of laying out what we know and don't know about extreme weather and a changing climate.
So I'm going to just do a very, very crude third grader's summary of where I would see those two reports, the National Climate Assessment and the IPCC report. I mean, the most bare bones assessment or summary, because that's all I'm actually capable of. So Andrew, stop me if you feel like I'm getting it wrong. And then I just want to sort of go around the rim here with these guys and just sort of see how their thinking either dovetails or differs. So, I mean, you know, I think the bare bones are that global temperatures are rising, that's due to increased presence of greenhouse gases, and that these greenhouse gases are primarily due to human activity, and that, as Andrew just said, even if we stopped all the greenhouse gases tomorrow, a lot of things would happen that are probably not all that desirable, but that if we don't, in fact, curtail greenhouse gases, more extreme things, more extreme changes will happen. Andrew, is that a reasonably okay assessment of basically where those two reports are right now?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go around the table. Ryan, is that basically your thinking, or do you have places where you would break off there?
No, I think that's what the scientific consensus really is that, you know, the Earth is warming. humans are playing a substantial
It'll be 73
role in that.
In New London, burning and 69 fossil fuels. In the Litchfield Hills.
Since the Industrial
with temperatures
Revolution,
this warm, we just need it.
And you know, we're pumping a lot of greenhouse
gases
into the atmosphere.
You can't talk during the forecast.
It's already having an effect.
So it looks like the most significant front
But I think, just like Andrew said, one of the things that drives meteorologists
Look, I'm sorry,
crazy,
your
and I don't
melted,
see
you can't
it,
hang around
this
here.
Kind
Beat
of reporting.
Today's show was
TV
produced by Betsy Kaplan and me. Our interns are Josh Malaya and Anna Novak.
Especially the national
Greg Hill and Lee Newton
appeared
in the intro and Greg tweets for us at WNPR.
That hits Oklahoma
Katie
City.
Tularsky is our executive producer.
It takes about
part of
30
Bill Curry
seconds
was played by Hilton Catterley.
The headlines
show
about
pages, articles,
that being,
and videos of the Faith
another
Middleton show staff
of
fishing for crabs on Audubon Street.
Warming
Visit our website, WNPR.org.
When if you look at the actual peer-reviewed literature on tornadoes and climate change, like Andrew said, there's no link.
All right, so we've got a little more time.
There are some indications that there would be, even though the atmosphere becomes more unstable in a warmer world, there's less wind shear, so you don't have the wind shear to actually develop
and Ryan Henry.
Supercell
from,
and a tornado.
WFSB.
So when we see things like that, or you know, linking hurricanes,
Bruce, you know, when I get back to my computer,
change,
there's going to be
there's
some
a lot of really mixed
and
scientific
and
literature
me,
on whether hurricanes
you know,
are becoming
this,
more frequent
this
or more
isn't really
intense.
The kind of thing
and there's some
where
indications
we can
they may become
kind
less
of a collective
frequent.
Agnosticism.
So that
you know, the,
I
this,
think you know, we all sort of. I'm sure I speak for the other ones here at the table. We all sort of groan when we see those headlines in national media.
You can't just let Bruce DeBrees sit there and
just as I go around
this whole other alternative theory.
It's pretty evident
this.
To me from
this
just
is way, way too
so
important
You're
for
not exactly
us,
on the
for
same
children,
side of
for
the picnic table as
what,
Ryan
And I'm
Henry.
Sure you get that. I'm sure
well,
when you
know,
say
I
what you just said in another context,
as,
you get that. What's your
an
answer
open-minded
back?
Skeptic. I, you know, as weather forecasters,
you know,
we have to be skeptics. We go in every
the,
day, we look at information.
The answer I have
say,
is, you know, I'll
right
take the heat. I'm looking at all different angles of this.
But,
this
you know,
issue.
Coming to either climate change, I don't think we can just focus on carbon
you know,
dioxide.
Believes in anthropogenic
I mean,
global
carbon
warming,
dioxide to some
or against it.
Is
I'm looking at all the basic facts.
You
know,
I talk
about the
ice sheets 100 times
more prevalent than the
data that said
dioxide.
That's the biggest greenhouse gas.
It's been.
Now,
I,
2014,
I haven't done the research,
been,
but I heard
starting
that the amount
measured
of
in the 1970s and so on and so forth. I think there's so much misinformation
very, very, very
out there. We heard things about the
polar
bear
normally
how
present.
The polar bears
but aside from carbon dioxide, we also have to look at other
are,
things that are
very,
big drivers in
very
climate.
High.
So,
one,
you know, I'm
is
willing
the temperature
to take
of our
the
oceans.
Heat.
And 2008,
don't
claim NASA
to be an
came out
on climate. My
well, the Pacific Ocean is starting to cool off. It's what we call the PDO.
If it is happening,
it is carbon dioxide.
It's in a cooling stage now.
All the very strong
related
that comes
to
along with burning
fossil
fuels,
cooling.
We can reduce
in addition
that,
to that,
all
the
sun.
For it.
That's the ultimate
so
source
I,
of our
know,
energy.
I totally believe
the sun
what your
has been
saying that. You know what?
Relatively
one thing
inactive.
We can all agree on is that
why
I've
take
been
any
doing
chances?
A little reading,
let's,
and from what I've seen.
All
it's
agree
that it's
go
weak
forward
stage
to
about 100 years and
maybe
getting weaker.
Planet, if we're going to burn less
sun's
fossil fuels,
spots
disappear.
We could actually be
energy,
then
hurled
into
a pollution
period
20 to 30 years
it's
of
carbon
cooling.
Monoxide.
You combine that
oxide
with the
PDO going into a cool
about,
state.
I think in the long run, we're all better off
Pacific Ocean
way.
Turning cooler.
Ryan, do you think that your and job is changing and will change over
the next
5 years? I mean, really going into the show before asking you guys the questions.
Warming that we've seen over the centuries.
I might have had some maybe
that we may be going
into
a little period.
But for the most part, you know, whether I'm looking at you guys or
and,
Bob Maxson,
you know, we have
or
to talk
Gil
about
Simmons
cooling
or,
too.
Joe
cooling
Fury
may
or
not
Rachel
Frank,
be the best
thing in the world
better.
Either.
But
go back to
I don't really know
the sun was
what
weak
people think
from,
about these kinds of questions. Because
so
it's really kind of
to
not,
1700,
as
we had
saying,
what we called the
that big a
minimum
part of your job description.
When sunspot activity was
five
very,
years,
very low.
The profession will change a little bit.
A lot of civilization suffered because of the
addressing those kinds of questions, incorporating that
and also the other thing I want
to
point out is
use becomes a trend.
You know, and in some ways I'm kind of criticizing the media here.
To
is
see
that
more
we always
reporting
seem to
on climate
be presenting
change.
The
and
bad
I think it is important. I mean,
instead
I think
of the
you
good
really
side.
Need to educate people.
What's so bad about warming?
On
yes,
climate change and how it
rise,
will impact
I
them.
I think we are always
but
telling
I
people
don't
that
think you necessarily have
the coastline
to do that
is dangerous
in
no matter how high the
context
sea levels
of a
are.
3-minute weather
but,
segment. I think there's certainly room for that.
There are some good things.
Bruce mentioned that they had done a special and talked about climate change. There's certainly other avenues to do that
got ever growing population.
So I don't think the two are
high energy
necessarily have to go together, but I think some thoughtful
well, maybe our energy costs would diminish.
Reporting on
I mean, these
climate
are just things that are in the back of my mind. I don't have a lot of knowledge on
Garrett,
that. But
you said, I think it was 15
I
years
don't
ago,
like the way media
meteorology
always
education.
Portrays
over those 15 years,
global
have you
warming
changed?
Or climate
feel
change
as your approach to this
a
subject
negative.
Matter is evolving.
I think we need to
yeah, I think
do a little bit more on what's
there
positive.
Are many of us,
although of course the energy costs
was
covered today on where we live, which by the way, should hear where we live. Climate
change. We're all skeptical. I think that
again,
as mentioned earlier, we're kind of trained.
You know,
there are skeptical a lot of scientists, and we should appreciate that.
Heat air conditioning and,
but
and
as
energy,
time has gone along, and I've researched through the American Meteorological Society, there's a variety
of journal
articles.
And like we've said, those of us sitting at this
table
are
feelings
more day-to-day type
meteorologists.
A lot of colleagues,
in my opinion,
that I'm going to rely on those who are studying climate every day. That's their main focus. And if you look at the numbers, about 97% of climate scientists say that there is climate change happening.
I'm a
sailor, I'm inclined to go along with the peer-reviewed research that says, this is happening. Let's, and of course, then what do we do about it? And I think that's, of course, the bigger discussion, and that goes more towards policy, which is out of my realm as a meteorologist. But I think that's where a lot of the public stands is, okay, what are we going to do? What's our next step?
Andrew Refkin, Ryan Hanrahan before, was talking about how meteorologists are tearing their hair
out
sometimes
when they
see linkages between tornadoes.
I don't have an answer for it. In fact,
like
I've told a
but
number of
there's
people,
a climate scientist
I'm
right
trying
now
to find an answer for it, but I have
Bruce
noticed
said,
a number
the
of
thing
people
that's really bothering
have
him
said
about
to
Bruce
me,
Bruce is so eloquent
hasn't it become
about
more windier?
This. He's got
the
sun, and
years,
he's got the Pacific
myself,
Ocean
well,
Oscillation.
Yeah,
he's got a lot of things going on there that
a great explanation for that, whether it's climate change or something else.
Sort of point to different conclusions from the climate scientist community. So can you kind of react to that a little bit? I mean, how do these two groups get talking to each other? But, Brian, once again, that's more and more what your job
is,
right? What Bruce just described. Not your job, but it's a byproduct of your job. People come up to you and say, I've been noticing X.
Really
can you explain it in terms of why?
Well, absolutely. And you know, it's for us really to educate ourselves about the science and have an answer for people. You know, we do our best. We try to give people an answer for how they should dress their kids as they send them to school in the morning. We also now are fielding questions on climate science and, you know, global wind patterns and things like that. And I think, you know, keeping up with the science is important for us to do. I mean, one of the things, you know, as Andy mentioned earlier,
range
statistically
of
significant
people reading it that are
impacts of climate change,
different.
Heavy rainfall events. The Northeast
is,
has seen a dramatic, the research shows,
just
has seen like a 75% increase in the number of extreme
there.
Rainfall events.
We go,
but
we
they haven't necessarily
like
seen an increase
where,
in hurricanes or tornadoes or anything like that. So sort
of
sifting through
more
things
of
like
an
that.
Ideological is question
one good thing about working with meteorologists is you're to wrap some carbon tax. You know what you're talking about.
All
right. Thanks to all of you guys for coming in. It's a great conversation. My email address is Colin, C-O-L-I-N. WNPR. But if you're really mad, send it to
C. Kolarski
at
WNPR.org.
We'll be back tomorrow with the notes. Once again, thanks to Ryan and Bruce and
Garrett
for coming in here.
Step in the same unfortunately, some of these issues end up becoming like an identity badge, like a gun rights issue or abortion and climate changes. According to many social
scientists, I'm Kyan Wolf, and whenever I go out on a date, the very first thing I like to bring up is climate change.
Your views are not a function of the science.
It makes for a really good icebreaker.
You start to pick and choose the science, and that's what happens with where you get divergent views, even among very smart people with the same information. Just to give you an example, I did a piece a couple of years ago on Dot Earth on my blog about four different Nobel Prize winners in physics. So these are Nobel laureates in physics. You know, they know this stuff, the basics of physics, and they had the whole range of views on global warming, from it's a hoax to it's a serious crisis. And that says a lot to me. It says that don't count on more information making things making the societal debate clearer.
So one of the things I know, I mean, I've got a bunch of questions for you, Andrew, and I know you have to go, but one of the things that I know that you've written about is that then maybe when people get the same information but from a different source, it has a bigger impact than more information from the same source about the same thing. And for example, I mean, probably the only people in the world more trusted and beloved than a local meteorologist are one's own religious leaders, right? And one of the things you've looked for is – and we see evangelical Christians beginning to talk about this subject in a different way. We see the Pope talking about it in a different way.
Yeah, I just wrote about that today. Again, I was at a meeting at the Vatican for a week on what we call sustainable development. How do we head toward 9 billion people with still a thriving planet and, you know, the fewest regrets? And it was fascinating to see scientists, including one of the world's great oceanographers, Walter Monk, hanging out with theologians and having serious discussions about this. And it gets to the reality, and this gets back to what I was saying about the divergent views. The science only sort of – science kind of creates the shape of the playing field, like a soccer field, but it doesn't tell you what the rules of the game are going to be. We as society make up based on our values, and often on divergent values and discussion and debate in a democracy, we kind of come up with this, what we're going to do or not do. And that means it's never going to be neat and clean. And actually, the more democratic you are, probably the less neat and clean it'll be. And that's why crosstalk is really important, among finding ways for people to look among all those points of heat. There are definitely points of agreement, like, you know, greenhouse gases actually function. Some people will always feel that the science points to them being less important than other people feel. And that's not going to necessarily go away. But what I found, too, in the social science shows that even people who are very divergent on their views on global warming seriousness often agree on things like energy efficiency, mm-hmm. or the need for more research on energy frontiers, whether it's nuclear power or solar panels. So there's ways to go forward even when you have that divergent array of views.
All right, Andrew Revkin, thanks so much for taking the time with us.
Sure.
We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk to our meteorologist some more about all this.
Dogwoods are all in bloom. Oh, what a glorious day for picnics and frisbees and roller skaters, friends and lovers and lonely sunbathers. Everyone's out and merry. Manhattan in January.
It'll be 73 in New London and 69 in the Litchfield Hills. With temperatures this warm, we just needed... Hey, Penguin, you can't talk during the forecast. So it looks like the most significant front will come through on Monday. Look, I'm sorry your house melted, but you can't hang around here. Beat it! Today's show was produced by Betsy Kaplan and me. Our interns are Josh Nalea and Anna Novak. Greg Hill and Lee Newton appeared in the intro, and Greg tweets for us at WNPR Colin. Katie Tolarski is our executive producer. The part of Bill Curry was played by Hilton Catterley. For show pages, articles, and videos of the Faith Middleton Show staff fishing for crabs on Audubon Street, visit our website, WNPR.org. On tomorrow's show, the nose wants to marry Harry. And now, back to Colin.
All right. So we've got a little bit more time left with this group. Let me reintroduce them. From NBC Connecticut, we have Garrett Arjanis and Ryan Hanrahan. From WFSB, we have their chief meteorologist, Bruce DePriest. So, Bruce, you know, when I get back to my computer, there's going to be some emails. And they're going to say to me, you know, this isn't really the kind of thing where we can afford to have kind of a collective agnosticism, you know, that this global crisis is significant enough with melting ice sheets in Antarctica and melting glaciers and stuff like that, that you can't just let Bruce DePriest sit there and construct this whole other alternative theory about this. This is way, way too important for us, for our children, for our grandchildren. And I'm sure you get that. I'm sure when you say what you just said in other contexts, you get that. What's your answer back?
Well, you know, the answer I have is, you know, I'll take the heat. I'm looking at all different angles of this this issue. I'm neither a person who's believes in anthropogenic global warming or against it. I'm looking at all the basic facts. Now, you talked about the ice sheets melting and everything like that. I just saw some recent data that said the ice sheet there is the greatest it's been 2014, then since it's been starting to be measured in the 1970s and so on and so forth. I think there's so much misinformation out there. We heard things about the polar bears, how the poor polar bears are suffering. Well, I understand their populations are very, very high. So, you know, I'm willing to take the heat. I don't claim to be an expert on climate. My belief is this. This is what I say to people. You know what? If it is happening, if it is carbon dioxide, all the various other pollution that comes along with burning fossil fuels, if we can reduce that, all the better for it. So, I totally believe what your guest has been saying, that, you know what, one thing we can all agree on is that why take any chances? Let's all agree to go forward to make things better for the planet. If we're going to burn less fossil fuel, make things more efficient, go to solar energy, then that's the less pollution, whether it's carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, or whatever we're talking about. I think in the long run, we're all better off that way.
Ryan, do you think that your job is changing and will change over the next 5 years? I mean, really going into the show before asking you guys the questions, I might have, you know, had some, maybe been able to make some guess about what people believe. But for the most part, you know, whether I'm looking at you guys or Bob Maxson or Gil Simmons or Joe Fury or Rachel Frank, well, I know what Joe believes about everything, but that's a different thing. I don't really know what people think about these kinds of questions because it's really kind of not, as we've been saying, that big a part of your job description. Do you think in the next 5 years the profession will change a little bit and maybe it does become addressing those kinds of questions, incorporating that kind of science into the science you already use becomes a trend?
Yeah, I mean, I think you will start to see more reporting on climate change. And I think it is important. I think you really need to educate people on climate change and how it will impact them. But I don't think you necessarily have to do that in the context of a 3-minute weather segment. I think there's certainly room for that. You know, Bruce mentioned that they had done a special and talked about climate change. There's certainly other avenues to do that and to educate people. So I don't think the two are necessarily have to go together, but I think some thoughtful reporting on climate change is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Garrett, you said, I think it was 15 years ago that you finished up your meteorology education. Over those 15 years, have you changed? Do you feel as though your approach to this subject matter is evolving?
Yeah, I think that there are many of us that when this was all coming up as a discussion initially, we were all skeptical. And I think that, as we mentioned earlier, we're kind of trained to be skeptical as scientists, and we should appreciate that. But as time has gone along and I've researched through the American Meteorological Society, there's a variety of journal articles and conferences, I would say that my feelings have evolved over time and there's a lot of colleagues that feel that way.
Let me grab one quick call here from John in or on or near Long Island. Hi, John.
Yes.
Yes. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a sailor and I've been sailing on the east end of Long Island for about 40 years. And I've noticed in the past 10 to 15 years, there's a definite increase in the average wind speed. 10 to 15 years ago, 30-knot winds were rare and becoming more and more common. And my question is, first of all, is this something that may be attributable to climate change?
All right. Well,
also,
Bruce,
is it possibly related to the El Nino La Nina cycle?
Bruce was nodding his head, at least, about the wind speed.
Well, you know, I don't have an answer for it. In fact, I've told a number of people I'm trying to find an answer for it, but I have noticed a number of people have said to me, hasn't it become more windy over the years? And I'm thinking to myself, well, yeah, but I don't necessarily have a great explanation for that, whether it's climate change or something else. That's something that's still a big mystery to me.
All right. Wolfie just said I should give my email address. Maybe I should give somebody else's email address, considering what the emails may be like. But, Brian, once again, that's more and more what your job is, right? What Bruce just described. Not your job, but it's a byproduct of your job. People come up to you and say, I've been noticing X.
Yep.
Can you explain it in terms of Y?
Well, absolutely. And you know, it's for us really to educate ourselves about the science and have an answer for people. You know, we do our best. We try to give people an answer for how they should dress their kids as they send them to school in the morning. And we also now are fielding questions on climate science and, you know, global wind patterns and things like that. And I think, you know, keeping up with the science is important for us to do. I mean, one of the things, you know, as Andy mentioned earlier, statistically significant impacts of climate change, heavy rainfall events. The Northeast has seen a dramatic, the research shows, has seen like a 75% increase in the number of extreme rainfall events. But they haven't necessarily seen an increase in hurricanes or tornadoes or anything like that. So sort of sifting through things like that.
This is one great thing about working with meteorologists is you can give them the rap sign and they absolutely know what you're talking about. All right. Thanks to all of you guys for coming in here. This is a great conversation. My email address is Colin, C-O-L-I-N at WNPR.org. But if you're really mad, send it to ctolarsky@WNPR.org. We'll be back tomorrow with the notes. Once again, thanks to Ryan and Bruce and Garrett for coming in here today.
Global warming's good for you.
I'm Kyone Wolf, and whenever I go out on a date, the very first thing I like to bring up is climate change. It makes for a really good icebreaker.